Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Residue is not just another true crime podcast, but a necessary tool for those who want to understand the dangers lurking in the real world. Residue is created, hosted, edited, researched, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. If you would love to help out the show, the best thing to do would be hit that follow button and also leave a 5-star review. If you do leave a 5-star review, I will be mailing out cute little stickers and thank you notes because I do appreciate you all so very much. Just shoot me a DM and a follow on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook Residue, a true crime podcast, and on TikTok you can find two accounts. We have Residue Podcast for all the true crime lovers and Unlocking Your Memory, Champagne Chrissy. That is just a little something for all of your Gen X, 80s, 90s nostalgia needs, because let's be honest, you guys, I cannot handle true crime all the time. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode, Jacksonville Beach Nightmare. As always, listener discretion is advised. Jacksonville Beach was supposed to be a fresh start for 25-year-old Corey Parker. It was the first taste of true independence, her own apartment, a break away from the icy winters of upstate New York, and a chance to live life on her own terms. Tall and strikingly beautiful at 5'11", Corey looked like she could be a runway model. Always smiling, that kind of smile that made people want to be near her. Friends described her as magnetic, a people person who loved dancing. She loved late nights out at local bars like her favorite, the Ritz. And Corey kept busy, taking on night shifts at a local bar called the Ragtime and also taking college classes. But beneath the sunshine and the beach town charm, a nightmare was about to begin. Corey had grown uneasy in her ground floor apartment, and it didn't help that neighbors had spotted a peeping Tom nearby. There was a feeling that she couldn't quite shake, that someone might be watching her. On the night she went out with friends, nothing seemed out of the ordinary. It was 1998 Thanksgiving Eve, and this is often called the best bar night of the year. This is a time when old friends reunite, people are back home for the holiday spirit is high. Corey Parker had plans to make the most of it, and she was hoping her best friend could join her that night, but her best friend was heading home for the holidays. And undeterred, Corey arranged to meet up with friends Tiffany, Tanya, and Kat for a night out in Jacksonville Beach. It was supposed to be just another fun evening, drinks, dancing, laughter. But by Thanksgiving Day, something felt off. Corey didn't show up for the holiday dinner that she planned with friends. And some assumed she had overslept or changed plans, maybe she was hungover. It wasn't until Friday morning that the worry really set in. Corey had an early shift at Ragtime, the restaurant and bar she worked at. And if you've ever worked in the restaurant industry, like I have, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, is really a very busy day in restaurants, and you can make a lot of money as a server. So when Corey didn't show up, everyone starts worrying because this is not like Corey. Concerned coworkers decided to go check on her. When they arrived at her apartment, her car was in the lot. Her door was locked. They kept knocking, but no response. One of the coworkers walks around, looks through her windows, and notices that he can see a foot motionless on her bed. This is when the police are called. And the officers responded very quickly. When they show up, they are also peering through Corey's bedroom window. They knock on the window again with no response. Circling the whole entire apartment complex, they found a back kitchen window that was slightly open in Corey's apartment. An officer hoisted himself through this window, landing inside, and this is when he sees a trail of blood that led from the kitchen toward the bedroom. Corey Parker was found inside, completely naked, covered in blood, brutally stabbed to death. The walls were streaked with blood, and this scene was so violent, it was so personal, that hardened officers said that when they went home that night, they cried. They couldn't get the image of Corey out of their mind. Police quickly secured the apartment. Investigators began combing through the horror of what they had just come upon. It appeared that Corey had been attacked in her bed. Her purse and her car keys sat on the kitchen table, suggesting that she made it home safely. On the floor beside her bed lay a single gold cigarette lighter. On the bed itself, there was a pair of her underwear. Investigators found several plastic Bic lighters all around Corey's house. So this one gold lighter, this one Zippo, stood out to them. On the kitchen windowsill, the crime scene investigators could see blood swipes both outside and inside the window. These finger marks looked as though someone was wearing gloves when they entered Corey's apartment. All evidence was sent to the FBI labs. With the crime scene sealed off and investigators trying to piece together what happened inside Corey Parker's apartment, attention turned to the people who knew her best. Friends, neighbors, co-workers, anyone who might offer a clue to who could have committed such a brutal personal crime. As police canvassed the area, they heard something strange. They were told that there had been reports of a peeping Tom lurking around the apartment complex. Someone had seen this person watching women through their windows. Investigators retraced Corey's last known steps on the night before Thanksgiving. She had gone out with friends, Tiffany, Tanya, and Kat, and they'd all met up at their favorite hangout, the Ritz. By around 1:45 a.m., the group began to part ways. Tiffany Zienta was the last known person to see Corey. She later told police that she had seen Corey in the parking lot as they were leaving for the night. Tiffany was going to keep going out bar hopping and Corey was going home. But what Tiffany said next raised red flags. According to her, after leaving her friend's place, she called Corey and spoke to her. She said it was just a quick, casual check-in after their night out. So investigators pulled Tiffany's cell phone records to confirm this timeline, but there was no call. Nothing matched her story. Tiffany never called Corey. So was Tiffany just simply mistaken? Too drunk to remember what actually happened, or was Tiffany deliberately lying? And the consistencies didn't stop there. So as detectives dug deeper, they learned that Tiffany may have harbored more than just friendly feelings for Corey. Friends of the women revealed that Tiffany had been bi-curious and had developed an intense crush on Corey, one that bordered on obsession. She often spoke about Corey. She fixated on her. Some even said Tiffany had once told them she stopped by Corey's apartment late that night, the night of the murder, and knocked on her door and got no response. As investigators are digging deeper into these two leads they have, so now we have a possible peeping Tom or a possible friendship that went wrong. The medical report comes back. Corey had been stabbed 101 times, and 54 of those stab wounds were post-mortem. This autopsy report reveals that Corey fought like hell for her life. She had so many defensive wounds. This was definitely anger and rage-filled. This leaves investigators to wonder, had Tiffany imagined a deeper relationship with Corey than actually existed? And if Corey did reject her, could that have triggered something inside of Tiffany? Investigators needed answers, and Tiffany wasn't giving them any. She had already lawyered up and refused further questioning. Friends of both Tiffany and Corey were also telling police that they overheard Tiffany talking about the crime scene one night. She was talking about the way the stab wounds look, the way the crime scene looked. Investigators bring Tiffany in to submit her DNA and her fingerprints, and in that interrogation, they find out that Tiffany knew someone who was working on the crime scene, and this crime scene investigator told her what the scene looked like. She also said she is not in love with Corey. She thinks Corey's beautiful, they're great friends, she's fascinated by her, but she's not in love with her. She's not bi-curious, as people are saying. This is when police learn that they might be going down the wrong path here, because Tiffany's DNA comes back and it is not a match for anything found inside of Corey's apartment. But upon further investigation of the crime scene, the underwear that were found on Corey's bed contained one male hair. One Caucasian male hair. Detectives then begin investigating Corey's neighbor, Joe Berg. She had a short relationship with him, and he didn't have the greatest alibi for that night. But Joe Berg is also quickly ruled out. Corey was well-liked. Corey didn't have any enemies. Was this crime possibly connected to her job at Ragtime? There was a cook there at Ragtime that liked Corey. He was obsessed with Corey. In his own words, yeah, he said, "I'm obsessed with Corey." And this guy's name was Eric. And now Eric seemed like the perfect suspect. Police were like, okay, this is it. This guy is creepy. People at work said he made them feel uncomfortable. All of the women said he flirted too much. He came on to them too much. And Eric asked Corey out a lot, but she always said no. She was still very nice to Eric. And she was always like, "Eric, I'm not interested." And now this Thanksgiving, Eric knew that Corey wasn't going home. She was staying in town. So he asked her if she would like to come over for Thanksgiving dinner. And Corey said, "No, thank you." But Eric still made that dinner. He made that entire dinner thinking, "I'll just see if Corey wants to come over. I'll just keep asking and I'll have everything ready just in case she says yes." Police bring him in and he goes over the top, telling them how infatuated he was with Corey. And I'm not lying to you about this, you guys. You can listen to the interrogation tapes. He is literally sitting there saying, "Yeah, I'm obsessed with her. So what? I didn't kill her, but I'm infatuated with her." He said that he fantasized about Corey 24/7. I mean, investigators' red flags are like, ba-boom, boom, boom. He asked Corey over for Thanksgiving. She declined. And did he go over to her apartment in a rage? I mean, Eric is suspect number one right now. They take DNA swabs, they take fingerprints, and nothing matches. Nothing matches. Eric is ruled out. This case starts to go cold. It is 1 year after the murder of Corey Parker, and everyone is frustrated beyond belief. There is not one lead to be had in this case. By the 1 year mark, with no arrest, no solid leads, Corey's family decided to take matters into their own hands. They offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to an arrest, hoping money might shake loose the truth. Flyers with Corey's beautiful smiling face, that same magnetic smile that everyone remembered, they were posted all over town. And for friends, seeing her image every day was both a call for justice and a gut punch reminder that she was never coming back. The case remained stalled until 18 months after Corey's murder. Something unexpected surfaced. It was May 2000, and a group of men were hanging out on a dock at a nearby lake. They were drinking, talking, when the topic of Corey Parker's murder came up. William Rensler was one of the men sitting on this dock that day, and William Rensler was a bounty hunter. He recalled a man named Robert Denny, and this man, Robert, disappeared not long after the murder, and he lived in a nearby building. He was dismissed very early on by detectives because he was only 17 years old. But William is sitting there hanging out with his friends, and he remembers that a few of these guys he's hanging out with used to work with Robert Denny. And they remembered something unsettling that Robert Denny said to them. He told them at work one day that he used to watch a woman who lived next door to his apartment. He said he would fantasize about her, that he could see her bathroom light flick on and off, and he'd imagine what she might be doing in there. And that woman was Corey Parker. So William, this kick-ass bounty hunter, calls his connections down at the police station and things get rolling. And now, 18 months after Corey Parker's murder, police finally had a new name on their list. As investigators looked deeper into Robert Denny, the profile that emerged was unsettling, and not just for what they learned about him, but about his family. Robert had a brother in prison, serving time for a horrifying 1991 murder in Maryland. He stabbed a woman 97 times. After Corey's murder, Robert had quietly left Jacksonville Beach. He was now living in Maryland, and police needed his DNA, but they couldn't come right out and ask for it, so they got creative. Investigators approached Robert under false pretenses, claiming that he resembled a suspect in an unrelated aggravated battery case. So Robert agreed to talk, but when asked for a DNA sample, he straight up refused. But still, they tried to catch him off guard. So Robert's sitting in this interrogation room. He lights up a cigarette and officers are like, okay, cool, we got him. He's going to put that cigarette butt in the ashtray. And he didn't. Robert put that cigarette butt out in the ashtray, but then he slipped it behind his ear and kept it behind his ear. Next, they give him a bottle of water and Robert's not touching it. He doesn't open it. He doesn't go near it. Next, they ask him if he'll sign this statement for coming in today, and then they tell him after he signs the statement, he has to put it in this envelope and then lick the envelope. And Robert was like, you guys, what are you doing? He stands up and he says, this is the third time you've tried to get my DNA. Lick it yourself. This catches detectives completely off guard. This guy is cautious, calculated, and clearly aware of these traps set before him. So next up, surveillance. Police watched him closely at the computer store where he worked. And while on a smoke break, Robert ripped the filter from his cigarette and stuffed it in his pocket. So the message is clear. He knew how to cover his tracks. He knew they were watching him. But the next morning, Robert steps outside again at his computer job, another cigarette in his hand. And this time, after taking his first drag, he spits on the ground. But that day it had rained and there was like a thin layer of water on the pavement. So his saliva floated perfectly on top of that pavement. And the detectives sitting there in the car are like, holy shit, we got him. Like, he goes back into the computer store and they just rush over, scoop up the sample, and off to the labs it goes. It was a match. Robert Denny's DNA matched two separate samples from Corey's apartment. The killer is finally identified, but this case wasn't closed. Not yet. Because prosecutors wanted to make sure that this was going to stick. DNA is powerful evidence, but only if it can't be explained away. If Robert could argue that there was an innocent reason for it to be there, the whole case could unravel. So what they needed was his own denial. They needed a statement that he had never met Corey, he didn't know Corey, and he never entered her apartment ever. And to get that, detectives sent in a female undercover detective, wired up, and she played it casual. She knocked on Robert's door. She was there claiming to be part of a follow-up investigation, talking to everyone who used to live in the Jacksonville apartment complex. She showed him a stack of photos. She was like, do you know this person? Do you know this person? And Robert would nod and say, yeah, I know him and I know him too. Then she held up a photo of Corey and she says, what about her? Do you know her? Have you ever talked to her? And Robert shakes his head no. Did you ever go into her apartment? He shakes his head no again. And this detective stood there freaking out in her mind, thinking, holy shit, we have him. And later that same day, police return back to Robert Denny's home, this time with handcuffs.
Are you into all things weird? Do you ever go to a party and all you can talk about is true crime? Or bugs? Or ghosts? Or that weird science fact that you just can't get enough of? Well, I'm Harmony.
And I'm Haley.
And we're the hosts of your new favorite podcast,
Make It Weird,
the comedy podcast that's bringing you the most bizarre stories from all around the world. Every other week, Harmony and I will each share a new story about something that we find particularly weird. Like the story of the 1920s female watch painters who were being poisoned by radium. Or the story of Carl Tanzler, the man who kept a woman's corpse in his house for 7 years. And in between those weeks, Haley and I will share some especially weird current events in our mini-episodes.
Like that time someone stole 34,000 avocados.
Or that time a dog's microchip helped solve the mystery of its owner's murder.
New episodes are live every Wednesday, and you can listen to us on all podcast platforms.
Or watch our video on Spotify and YouTube.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of
Make It Weird.
Bye!
Detectives returned to arrest Robert Denny, and they expected resistance, but they didn't expect shock. As the handcuffs clicked around his wrist, the officers informed him he was being charged with the murder of Corey Parker, and he just blinked in disbelief. One detective said that he kept going, murder? What murder? He wasn't confused. He was stalling, and the investigators knew it. They brought him back to the station and into an interrogation room, and a camera was rolling as Denny, who is now 19 years old, faced detectives across the table. He's leaning forward. He's visibly angry. He starts looking straight into the camera lens, pretending to cry now. He's putting on those fake tears, and he looks right into that lens and says, "First off, I'm going to say this to the camera. What evidence you have is bullshit. I didn't do it." And he denied everything over and over. He was always uncooperative, defiant, unshaken. Eventually, he asked for a lawyer, so the interview was ended. But it didn't matter if he didn't want to talk, because the tip lines were now lighting up. In the hours and days after Robert's arrest was announced, people who had once known him began to speak out. Former neighbors, former friends, even family. One call came from his ex-girlfriend, who recognized these small but critical details found at the crime scene, like the gold lighter. She said that lighter belonged to Robert. And another call came from Robert's former sister-in-law. She told police that Robert had always been creepy as fuck. He would wander around the house at night. He would peer into her windows. He had this weird darkness about him. And she said that she always wondered what he might be capable of. Robert Denny spent 4 years behind bars awaiting trial, charged as an adult with first-degree murder. In all that time, he never once showed an ounce of remorse, not any flicker of emotion. He was cold and detached. In court, his demeanor never changed. He listened to the testimony, heard the evidence, watched Corey Parker's family describe the hole her death had left in their lives, and he showed nothing. The jury didn't need long. After 45 minutes of deliberation, they returned with a unanimous verdict. Guilty. Robert Denny was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He was 17 when he murdered Corey Parker, but the brutality of the crime and his calculated efforts to avoid justice, this left no room for leniency with that judge. He would never walk free again. Behind the walls of the apartment next door, a teenager fantasized. He obsessed. He planned. He watched Corey Parker's life like it was some movie. When her bathroom light flicked on, he was there. When she came home late, he was watching. He wasn't a neighbor. He was a predator. And one night, he slipped through her window. What makes Corey's case so terrifying is not just what happened, but how close evil lived to her. Just one wall away. A quiet boy no one noticed until it was too late. Until next week, stay safe, and stay parent.